Welcome to Dreadful Digest, where we look at your favorite horror novels and rip apart their adaptations. I'm one of your hosts, Tessa Nelson.
I'm Sam.
And we are joined by Luis again. Thank you so much for joining us
Part two. He came back.
Oh, I was really worried for a second that he was just going to leave. so sick of us.
No, I have to talk about The Ring 2002.
So if you haven't checked out our last episode, we talked about the 1998 Japanese version. Now we're talking about the American version and how it relates to the original novel. But yeah, Luis, this is one of your favorite movies.
Yeah. No, first of all, thank you for having me again. I had a great time talking about the first, about the Japanese version and the book. And, you know, now talking about one of my favorite films. Yeah, as I said, I don't know if you guys listened to the previous episode, but
definitely
yeah,
check it out.
Like, I did mention how The Ring is not only a movie that I really like, but it's a movie that I love because what it means to me, it's one of my favorite films, and it's one of the first, if not the first, like at least from my memory, it's the first horror film that I watched from beginning to end. I watched it with my mother, and it's a movie that I rewatched many times with friends, with cousins, and it has a very special meaning to me. And I just really like the movie. I feel like it's one of my favorite horror movies. It's one of my favorite movies, regardless of genre. And yeah, I just feel like it's just a very, very well-made movie. And it's one of those remakes that I think improves on the original. And it just has it's the movie. It's the movie. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm very happy. I'm very glad to be back to talk about the film.
Perfect. Yeah. It's definitely got the atmosphere, really vibey for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Do you all want to get into your non-spoiler reviews of this film?
I mean, I kind of already said it before. This is a spoiler, but I'm going to say it anyway, so stop listening if you don't want that. you know, the last movie and the book are for theater girls, and the 2002 movie is for horse girls.
Yeah. We're really just hitting all the types of girls.
The range.
Only two. Yeah.
Everyone is somewhere on the spectrum of horse girl and theater girl.
I think so. I think that makes perfect sense.
Where would you place yourself?
I definitely lean more theater girl. My grandma had horses. I liked feeding them carrots, but I didn't like actually riding them. So I would say I'm more of a theater girl.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Luis?
It's
what
it's,
type of girl are you?
No, it is crazy because I feel like I'm kind of both because you know, I love
You're
theater.
You're definitely a theater girl.
I love theater. I love theater. I love musicals. I love Broadway. My sisters have done theater. My mom was a dancer. So, you know, I've always been close to the arts and to theater and all of this, and I love it. But not many people know, but I also love animals, and from I think I was like 6 years until I was like 12, I rode horses like in competitions.
Really?
In Yucatan. Yeah, in Yucatan. I have pictures. Yeah, yeah. I do have pictures.
This is crazy.
And
were you really good? Did you win?
Let's see if I can find them. yeah, I would win. And I had a horse.
Dang.
Look.
Sorry, theater girls and horse girls. Luis just won.
Oh my god.
Yeah,
you're
so
tiny on the horse.
I was so little.
That's so crazy.
And yeah, like I had this horse and you know, I love horses. And my mom, you know, my mom and my father, they've always been supportive. But you know, it's like I love horses. And I was like, do you want to ride horses? Yeah. So we found like this academy of, you know, like this equestrian center. And I would go every Tuesday and Thursdays.
Wow.
And, you know, at the beginning, it was just, you know, let's just ride a horse and, you know, do like a round, like a circle. And then I started doing like the competitions where the horse actually jumps over the obstacles and all of that.
Dang.
And yeah, it was pretty fun. I did it. I think like for 6-7 years.
Wow.
And then I wanted to engage more with people. So I switched to basketball. Yeah, to have like a team with my friends and all that. But yeah, so you know, you see, like I'm both. Like maybe I'm more of a horse girl because I've actually done horse.
Yeah.
I've done horse.
That's true.
I've never done theater. I never stepped into a theater play. I never acted on a theater production.
That's
crazy.
But I feel like you'd like it.
I
feel like
know.
You should
I
direct a stage play
I,
like once.
No, I have to do that. You know, and that's one of my goals and that's one of my dreams, you know, to do like to jump over, of course, you know, focus on film, but to also jump over to do theater.
Yeah,
you
know, no, that's one of my goals as well.
If it's like a theater adaptation of a movie, either it's a, like an existing movie or a movie, you know, a movie that I do, a movie
Ring
that I
the
do,
musical.
Or a, you know, a musical, musical. Direct a movie musical, you know, yeah. Like it's always that. And but yeah, for now, I would say I'm more into horse.
Okay. No, I like what you're spitting, man. Because like, well, that's why I admire Mark Platt a lot. Because, you know, he acquired the rights to Wicked. Mm-hmm. He made the Broadway musical. And then he also did the movie. And mm-hmm. I just think that is such an ideal pipeline when you find really a good story like that. Anyway.
Or like Tina Fey, where she made the movie and then she made the musical and then she made the movie musical again.
Oh, yeah, for Mean Girls.
Yeah. Mean Girls. For Queen Bees and Wannabes. Isn't that what the book is called?
Yeah, although that's like a book about like being a girl and hitting puberty and being a teenage girl. And so it's not
direct.
No, it's not.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. We'll cover that next episode. Mean Girl versus Queen Bee, Wannabe, whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, that was mine. What's everybody else's non-spoiler review?
Gosh, yeah. What is mine? Definitely, probably my favorite version of the story that I've seen, although there are a bunch of adaptations. I enjoyed it on the second rewatch. I really enjoyed the atmosphere, the location, setting it in, I think it's Seattle, where it's just rainy all the time. And yeah, I had a fun time with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, as I said, I love the film. I think it's a very atmospheric, has a very specific look, you know, like this greenish 35mm look. I think the performances are great. The whole backstory that they added for Samara, her mother especially, you know, that's the biggest change.
Yeah, the ultimate horse girl.
And
true.
Yeah,
that's true.
And yeah, you know, I think it's a movie that's very good in every aspect. Performances, cinematography, directing, you know, expanding on something that already exists. And just, I think, like the impact that the movie had overall. I think that was one of the first American remakes that were very, very good. And it kind of jump-started this 2000 era mm-hmm. of remakes that yes. that I really appreciate.
Yeah. We support a lot of remakes.
Yeah. Yes, we do. But yeah, it's also my favorite iteration of the novel, of the story.
All right. Sam here has a synopsis for us. She's going to be covering the synopsis of the film.
This is going to be a crazy long synopsis because like the notes go crazy.
Okay.
okay, so Katie, my sister, by the way, shout out to my sister Katie. Katie and her friend Becca are watching TV in Katie's room, and one of them they're talking about the urban legend about like, oh, you watch this tape and then you die. You get a phone call after, and it tells you you're gonna die in 7 days. And then Katie's like, you're not gonna believe this, but I saw that tape when I was hanging out with my boyfriend Josh. And then she's like, your boyfriend Josh? And then they start talking about that for a little bit. Important stuff. Katie gets a call from her mom, and the TV starts like playing static. So Katie goes upstairs she turns it off and then turns it back on again. So she goes upstairs to check on her friend Becca and finds like water coming out from under the door. And she opens the door and like the tape is playing. I don't remember actually what happens here. I can't remember if the tape is actually playing. But anyway, she, you know, she dies.
Yeah, she opens TV. Yeah, she opens the door and there's a static like, TV and
yeah, it's like and then she dies.
Yeah.
So anyway, cut to Rachel picks up her son Aiden from school. The teacher is like showing Rachel pictures that her son Aiden drew, and she's like, look at these weird pictures your son drew of his cousin Katie. Remember my sister? I'm just kidding. The girl from the intro. Look at all these weird pictures that he drew of her dying. And Rachel's like, it's fine. Like, he's coping. Chill. And the teacher's like, he drew these a week before she died.
Crazy.
Freak. I'll say it now.
Falls into the, sorry.
Well, I'll say it again. I think we're going to say the same thing, that it wouldn't be an American Horror movie if there wasn't a freaky little kid.
Creepy kid trope
and this one
horror.
Has multiple freaky little kids.
Danny Torrance. Mm-hmm. This guy.
This guy. Aiden.
Aiden.
Yeah. Aiden Asakawa. I have to assume.
They both have powers.
Aiden Kelly.
Can you imagine if their last names were exactly Aiden the same?
Rachel Asakawa.
Yeah. Totally believable.
Aiden Asakawa. Anyway, So Aiden and Rachel go to the funeral for Katie. And outside the high schoolers are talking, and then Rachel comes out. Rachel's not a regular mom. She's a cool mom. She starts smoking a cigarette with them, and which is a crazy moment, by the way.
She's cool. She's a girl boss.
She's cool. Like, the kids are, like, smoking a cigarette. She grabs it. She's like, thanks. It's crazy. Yeah.
She's trying to fit in.
Low-key, Rachel is a crazy person, but she says lots of things that I think are insane. But anyway. So the high schoolers tell her about Katie's boyfriend, who died on the same night as her. Also, Aiden goes upstairs into Katie's room like a freak. Rachel goes up there to go see Aiden, and she finds a slip to pick up photos that Katie sent to have developed, and she decides to go pick them up. She filters through the photos, and she finds one with all of the faces of Katie and her friends who went out on this weekend earlier, all distorted. If you recall from our last episode, this is also in the Japanese movie. It is not in the book, though. So Rachel decides to go to the cabin where those pictures were originally taken, and she grabs the unmarked tape that, like, at the check-in table, there's a bunch of tapes available for rent. So she grabs the unmarked one, goes into the cabin. She watches the tape, and it's full of, like, abstract imagery. And she's like, uh-oh. And then she gets the call that she's going to die in 7 days.
Major bummer.
Honestly, like, avoidable. She didn't have to do that. Like, it's not, whatever. It's fine.
Why?
She could have just not. I feel like Asakawa has a reason because he's, like, investigating Asakawa in the Japanese movie. Rachel doesn't really.
But she's also a reporter. Right as she picks up on it, she starts working on it. She's like, yeah, true. I have a good story.
Honestly, the American one makes more sense in that sense than the Japanese one, technically. Because in the Japanese one, she's, like, already working on it. Whereas in the American one, that's true. So Rachel invites over her ex, Noah, and has, by the way, list of men we don't like in horror.
You don't like Noah?
I like Noah.
I think he's fine.
Yeah.
He's kind of walking the line for me. Oh. I just think it's weird how he, like, I just think he's weird. Okay. I have criticism. So she invites over her ex, Noah, and she's like, take a picture of me, take a picture of me. And he's like, okay, freak. And he takes a picture of her, and sure enough, she's distorted, just like the pictures that she found from Katie. Rachel shows Noah the tape, but he doesn't believe it. She makes him a copy so he can go find out where it came from.
Because he's like a video analyst.
Right. In this version, Noah, formerly known as Ryuji, is like, this is like his thing. Is like, he does video.
Good addition. Stuff. Made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked those scenes with them together.
True. Noah's assistant Beth arrives while they're going through a copy of the tape, and Rachel freaks out and she leaves. She's like, oh my gosh, not your new lover, basically. I don't know. That's not exactly how it goes, but that's more or less how it goes. So Rachel then goes to speak with Becca, who survived Katie, at the insane asylum. But Becca, and she's like, please, like, tell me, like, what happened to Katie? I don't remember what she says. But Becca's like, don't worry, she'll tell you how she died. Freak.
4 days, because at that point, all 3 days had already passed, I think. Right. So she's just like, you'll find out in 4 days.
Freak count three, I think.
A lot of freaks.
Can we put on the screen how many freaks there are in this summary?
More work.
Drop in the comments how many times I say freak in this episode. So Rachel goes to print images. So she goes, she's like, I'm going to pull stills from the tape. So she, like, notices, like, when the, I don't know how to explain this. She sees a lighthouse and she's like, I'm going to print out a picture of that. I can identify where this is.
Yeah, like, she sees, like, in the tape, there's, like, at the end of the, like, in the corner of the screen, there's, like, another image kind of, like, interfering. So she asks Noah, like, hey, what is
she's
this?
Like,
and they try to see. And then they find that there's, like, there was, like, another layer to the video, which was a still, like a video of a lighthouse.
Yeah. So she finds this lighthouse. And while she's, like, printing out pictures of this, there's a fly on the screen. And she's like, that's kind of weird. It looks kind of funky. And so she's like, I wonder if I could just, like, and she pulls the fly out of the screen. It's freaky.
Yeah, I don't get the point of the fly, but
Anyway, so then Noah is at
I think
the
it's
store.
I think it's like kind of like a foreshadow. That,
yeah, it's
you know,
like that things can come out. Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
I think that's all it is, though.
I mean, I guess I'm going off the idea that, like, these are things that Samara has seen, like, in the book.
Right.
Where I'm like, well, then why would she?
I don't think that's the case.
Not in this version?
That's not how I interpreted the tape in the American version.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Rachel, she starts researching this lighthouse and she finds information about Anna Morgan, who was a horse breeder who killed herself, who lived on this, like, horse breeding estate and, like, horse land where that lighthouse was. Rachel has, like, a dream of Samara. Oh, yeah, by the way, you don't know that it's Samara right now. But so Rachel has a dream of a girl with long black hair in a psych ward. And she's like, ah, and she wakes up and then she finds Aiden watching the tape. That's kind of how that happens, isn't it?
Yeah, so she has a dream. She has kind of like a nightmare of, so she hears the TV and she goes into the room and there's Samara standing, sitting on a chair, right? It's that moment. She's sitting in a chair, like with a, under a puddle of water. Yeah. And then when she approaches her, Samara touches her, burns her. Mm-hmm. And then she has like a vision of the island, I think. Mm-hmm. And then she wakes up, she sees that she has like a burnt mark of Samara's hand. And then she hears the TV. When she heads out to see what the TV is, she sees that it's Aiden watching the
not good
the tape.
But honestly, if anyone was going to watch that tape and survive, it'd be Aiden.
Yeah, I believe it.
So Rachel then takes a boat to Anna's. I put Anna's horse farm. Rachel takes a boat to Anna's horse island. And she's on this boat. And there's a bunch of other stuff there on this boat as well. There's horses on this boat. There's cars on this boat. There's people on this boat. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Huge boat.
She's on this boat to this island. And she goes. She sees this big, beautiful horse. And she's like, hello, horse. And the horse is like,
I have to get out of here right now.
And the horse kicks itself out of its enclosure. This is important stuff, I promise. The horse kicks
itself.
Such
a horrible scene to watch. Yeah.
It is. Kicks itself out of its, but this, the Godfather, when it comes to horse scenes. Anyway, that's also a Godfather spoiler. This is what I'm saying. We just like give spoilers for unrelated movies during this podcast. But anyway, so this horse is going crazy and it's like, I need to get out of here right now. It actually says that. That's a real line in the movie.
The horse says that.
Yeah, yeah. It's dubbed. And so anyway, Rachel's kind of like, what is going on? Everybody's freaking out. This girl's like, daddy, my horse. Why is it freaking out? The horse is running around all the cars. Finally, it starts running towards Rachel. And Rachel's like, and she like ducks. And the horse leaps over her head into the ocean to die.
Awful.
And then a little bit later, you see that under the boat, a pool of blood starts to come out.
The engine got it.
Yeah, the engine ate that horse.
So traumatizing. It's like I was when I watched it, I was right on my horse era.
So
out of all the things, you know, as much as I like the movie, I was like, it's this scene. This scene is the horror scene. Yeah.
That's what I remembered.
And then
most,
how the little girl screams, you know, the blood comes out, which actually that moment also appears in the tape.
Mm-hmm.
The puddle, the blood on the ocean.
Mm.
It's such a
good scene. And then it's just horrifying to see like how the horse jumps over and you see it kind of
hits the boat
on its way down and then it's trying to swim and then he gets like swept under the boat and then that's the last shot that we see the horse.
That shot where you're looking down, you know exactly what you're going to see and you're still like,
maybe it'll survive.
Yeah, exactly. And then the blood starts and you're like, oh, okay. So anyway, that's unfortunate for everyone involved. So meanwhile, Noah decides to go to a psych ward. It's the psych ward.
Huh?
No, doesn't he go? He goes to the psych ward to get details on Anna, and he wants to break into their record keeping facilities. This is a very funny scene. I will give it to you for liking Noah for this scene because he's like, "I've been to the record office upstairs," and they're like, "Nice try, it's downstairs." And he's like, "Bingo!" And then he goes downstairs.
And he breaks in.
It's great. So
he doesn't even need psychic abilities to do
that. No, he does not. So Rachel then arrives at the horse farm ranch and speaks with Anna's husband, who is alive. So she's like asking questions and she's like, tell me about your ex-wife. And he's like, I've like told so many reporters about this. And she's like, okay, well, I have this tape. And he's like, you need to get out of here. So Noah, in going through the files, in Anna's file and Anna's daughter's file, finds thermography, which are the photos that Anna's daughter... Her name's Samara. I'm just going to call her Samara. Yeah. You guys know. Come on. If you're listening to this episode, you know. So Noah finds thermography in Samara's file at the psych ward and is like, what is that? And then meanwhile, Aiden is...
And he sees also that there's a video of Samara's...
Yeah.
A psychiatric session with Samara and the video is missing.
Yeah. So Rachel then visits Dr. Grasnick on the island and asks about the Morgan's daughter.
Because the doctor was the psychiatric doctor for Anna.
She explains that Anna started having visits after adopting Samara.
No, but something very, very important about that scene with the doctor is that You know, Rachel's asking like, okay, but what happened? And she's like, yeah. So the moment she adopted Samara, she started having visions and like hallucinations, and she started visiting us. And then until she killed herself. And then it wasn't until Samara disappeared, when they took Samara out from this island. She doesn't know where she is. Where they took her from that island, that everything started to get better for everyone. Mm-hmm. So she's like, we don't know where she is, but we're glad that she's gone.
Yeah.
That's true. I forgot about that part.
And there's like a very good line. Let me see. I wrote it down. Rachel asks the doctor, was there something wrong with Samara? And the doctor asks, you mean medically? And Rachel goes, says, I mean, whatever you mean.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever you mean. And the doctor's like,
that's a great line. Yeah. That's a good example of when I said before, Rachel says a lot of crazy things. That's a good example. That another example is what she's talking to. This is very early on in the movie. Remember when I said that Rachel and Noah are like, they're looking at the tape. She goes, she's talking to Noah and she goes, can you explain it to me like I'm not in the geek squad? Or she says yeah. something like yeah. that. She clocks
yeah.
him.
Clocks him again. Yeah.
yeah. So anyway, Rachel returns to the Morgan house. She kind of breaks in.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah.
She breaks into the Morgan house and she finds, you guessed it, the tape. The tape from Samara's psych ward that was missing. She's watching the tape and it's this freaky little kid, Samara, who has hair down to her waist, I assume. She's just sitting down. Shot. They're asking her questions. They're like, she's like, hey, can I see my mommy? And they're like, no, because you're freaky. And she's like, she's like, my dad hates me. That's not how this scene goes.
They're asking her basically. So there's this. So these files that Noah found of like, it's like these scans, these brain scans, right?
The thermography
of, and they're asking her about.
They're like, how'd you make these pictures?
How'd you make this? And she's like, I just don't make them. I just see they them. Just are. You know, they just are.
Freaky.
And they asking like, why are you making life hard for everyone? She's like, I'm not she's like, I'm just, you know, this just happens, you know.
Yeah,
that's just what,
like,
it is. And
I'm sorry this is me.
And yeah, she's like, I'm not, you know, like, this is me, like, and this is not gonna stop, like, yeah. that's just how it is. Like, where's mommy? I miss mommy. I love mommy.
Yeah.
But dad doesn't love me. Dad wants to get rid of me.
Yeah, dad wants to get rid of me.
And at that moment, boom.
Quite literally. So she's watching this tape. She's watching this interview. And then Mr. Morgan appears behind her. And he like...
clocks her.
And but she doesn't knock out or anything. She's just like, ow. And then he takes the tape. And he's like... he's basically like, she will never leave me alone. She's always whispering in my ears. Anyway, then he goes and electrocutes himself.
I was not expecting that. That was crazy. Yeah.
Well, I thought, because they kind of set it up that he's going to be like, that he's bad, which, like, I guess he is.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, also, you don't really expect him to, like, feel bad,
yeah.
I guess. Like,
yeah, because, like, at that point, you're like, okay, so he's very suspicious.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he did something to Samara. You know, we see that in the recording. She's like, that he wants to get rid of me. He doesn't like me. And then, you know, he's like, go away. I don't have a daughter. I don't have this. You're like, okay, so this guy's hiding something. Yeah, he did something. And then in that scene, like, he's wearing like an extension. How do you call, like, the...
Like the cable?
The, like, cables with a bunch of...
Extension cord?
Yeah, like extension cord with a bunch of cables. And he just literally, he just walks into the...
the bathtub.
Into the bathtub, plugs everything in and turns on the extension and just electrocutes himself.
He does it right in front of Rachel.
It's a crazy scene in front of Rachel.
Bites the horse thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And right at that moment, Noah...
oh, yeah. Samara's like, daddy doesn't love me. He loves the horses, which is crazy. But yeah, so Noah shows up right then. Rachel remembers what Aiden told her when he called, that Samara doesn't like the barn. So Noah and Rachel decide to go to the barn, and there they find her old bedroom, which is where Mr. Morgan used to sequester her. So they rip out they climb up there, they rip out the wallpaper, and they find a burn marking of a tree in the woods. This is famously from Shelter Mountain, which Rachel recognizes. Also, it's in the video. It's in the tape. So Rachel recognizes it and she's like, oh my gosh, we have to go to the cabin. So they, and in the cabin, they find a ring mark on the floor. So they axe through it And wouldn't you know it, right below them is the well.
Yeah.
So,
but that's an interesting scene also because, yeah, there's the mark of the ring, but it's covered.
Yeah.
So by a carpet, right?
Right.
So, you know, similar to the book and the original film, like they're like, okay, so we're here, but okay, where is the well? Like, mm-hmm. what's happening? So they start to just go crazy, like, fuck, like we only have like that's the last day for Rachel. They're counting the hours.
Yeah.
And they're just Noah just starts like smashing things, and then like these little balls, right? Kind of like fall. I don't know how
they're like marbles or
yeah,
something.
Like marbles. And yeah, he jumps on marbles and yeah. the marbles just gather like in the center of the room.
And they're like, what is that?
And then they take the carpet off and they see
and
the
there's
ring.
The ring.
And
so,
it's like, okay,
yeah.
let's axe this.
So they axe through it, boom, there's the well. And this is pretty similar, I think, in all of the versions pretty much. Well, actually, that's not totally true because they go down to the well, they push the lid off of it, they're looking down it. They're like, we should throw something down there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they throw a rock down there and they're like, okay. But also while this is happening, Samara, presumably, is making all of the nails. Like water is pushing up all the nails in the floorboards
so
of the cabin.
Mm-hmm. So cool.
And they don't realize this. And so suddenly it like comes crashing down and the TV flies down and knocks Rachel straight into the well.
That's a very good moment.
Yeah, it's great.
And then the end of that scene is just like the TV mm-hmm. like in the ground and just kind of flickering and then it turns off.
She falls down. She lands face first in the water. And then there she finds Samara's dark hair and her remains. She gets like a vision.
Yeah, Samara grabs her. So she finds the hair and then Samara's hand just pops out of the water and grabs her. And then she has a vision.
She has a vision of... Put in the comments right now. Who do you think killed Samara in this version of Ring? Because I promise you it's not who you think. It's Anna Morgan, her adoptive mother. I did not see this coming.
Yeah, I was surprised.
What on earth? Yeah. So Anna puts a plastic bag over her daughter's head and throws her down the well. I keep wanting to say Sadako, but after finding Samara, Noah brings Rachel up. They return home. And there's a good moment here where they're like, how long could somebody even survive like in a well alive? And then Rachel's like, seven days. Which is something that I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I think that is so clever. And I mm-hmm. do wish that was in the previous versions.
Yeah.
It's good. Because it makes so much sense. I mean, it kind of doesn't make sense.
I don't know how you could survive that long.
But it makes sense for like, you know, for mm-hmm. the context of the story. So they return
which
home.
Going back to the movies, to the original movies, and I think also the books, there's one version of the novel. There's one novel. I don't remember which one it is. But they do mention it in Ring, in Sadako. How Sadako didn't die on the seventh day. Mm-hmm. Like she just didn't die on the seventh day or on the fall or before falling. But she stayed alive under the well for 30 years for whatever reason.
What? Literally how? What was she eating?
Yeah. That's crazy.
I don't know. She was just hydrating herself, I guess.
Yeah.
Hey, minnows swimming in there. Yeah. Just not munching on, I guess.
Yeah. But also that the well scene in the American movie is very good because, you know, she grabs the hair, then she gets Samara grabs her, and then after she has the vision, which they see like what happened, they see the truth, Samara's body in human form rises up from the water, floating, and then when Rachel grabs her, she just turns into like a skeleton.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets brought up.
Mm-hmm. So they return home, they pick up Aiden, and everything's perfect, and nothing wrong will happen ever again to these characters.
Yeah, or
the
so
the ending, happily ever after.
Happy ever after. So Noah is in his studio, and then the TV static starts up, and he's like, what? The video starts playing of Samara climbing out of the well. What on earth? She's coming closer and closer and closer until she comes through the TV. I think this is the first time we actually see Samara in her full deceased glory because we see, like, you see her steps as she walks out, like the water pooling below her, which I think is a nice touch. Yeah. I think that comes from the Japanese movie, though. That's not an American movie thing, right?
The what?
Like water being with her.
The water is infused more in this one, saying that she's afraid of the water.
I think it's
in the sequel where they mention water.
Oh,
in the Ring
okay.
2, the sequel for this one, that's the water is a big thing.
Okay, but so maybe this is an American movie thing.
I think
yeah.
so.
Yeah, okay. I think it is, yeah.
So, uh-oh, Noah dead. So Rachel speeds over, but Noah's dead when she arrives. So Rachel arrives home and she destroys one of the tapes. She's like, oh, why is this still happening? And then she realizes that she survived because she made a copy. So she takes her son, Aiden, to video copy place and like literally holding his hand makes him make a copy of the video. And the movie ends, and this is awesome. The movie ends with Aiden like looking at his mom and being like, wait, but like what happens to anyone who's seen it? And then it like ends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. That's the American 2002 movie.
Thank you, Sam. Mm-hmm.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the synopsis. Oh
you are welcome.
All right. If you guys want to know more research about the book specifically, check out our last episode. In this episode, I'm just going to be talking about the 2002 remake. So this film was released in 2002, directed by Gore Verbinski and written by Aaron Kruger. The Ring was a global hit, grossing $249 million worldwide. With a $48 million budget, it became one of the highest grossing horror remakes of all time.
And this is, I do want to talk a little bit about Gore Verbinski because his feature film debut was Mouse Hunt. Hmm. You know Mouse Hunt, right?
It sounds familiar.
It's an amazing like family movie about these chefs that have a mouse in their kitchen and they want to get rid of the mouse. Well, but the mouse is crazy and the mouse doesn't want to go out.
This is just Ratatouille.
So that's his feature. That's his debut. Then he did The Mexican with Brad Pitt. And then he did this one.
Oh.
2002. And right after this one, the next year.
Oh, I see.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Wow.
The first one. Man, and he did the second one. And then he did the third one. So this trilogy of Pirates of the Caribbean that I can't die for Pirates of the Caribbean. I think this trilogy is amazing. It's perfect. But it's crazy how from The Ring, then they hired. I mean, he had already shot Pirates of the Caribbean when The Ring came out. So clearly the executives were like, this guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
So let's have him do Pirates of the Caribbean with Johnny Depp, Orlando Bloom, Keira Knightley. Let's give him this $100 million dollar budget movie, you know, that's going to jumpstart this era of Disney live action.
Wow.
You know, ride stuff. And then after that, he did The Lone Ranger, which I think is also a great film.
Is that with Johnny Depp?
Yeah, Johnny Depp and the cannibal from Call Me By Your Name. What was his name? What's his name?
Oh my goodness.
Not the first time we've talked about Armie Hammer, that's by the way.
We actually have talked about Armie Hammer a bit.
And then after
Armie,
that.
Armie, if you'd like to come on the pod.
No.
Like,
no.
DreadfulDigestPod@gmail.com.
And right after that, he did A Cure for Wellness, which was a very, very good looking movie that I didn't love and flopped hard. And I think that's, they kind of blacklisted him, I feel like. They put him in director jail. He hasn't done anything.
Director jail.
After that.
Wow.
He has a new movie coming out, I think, this year or next year.
Oh, let's see.
But that's crazy, you know, from making.
He was in Rango.
Oh, yeah. He did Rango also. He did Rango. You know, like, so for
I
me,
love
it's crazy
Rango.
How he has.
Crazy. I haven't seen that in ages.
Like, that's a crazy streak, you know? The Ring.
That is crazy.
Pirates of the Caribbean 1, 2, 3, and then Rango.
Dang.
That's crazy.
You know, like, he's a great director. And I think this movie is an example of how good something can be when you hire the right person and when you let that person cook.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Samara's
like...
Samara's curse video.
Let him cook.
I have that logged on Letterboxd.
Wait, yeah, it's on you're the only person that has a log that I follow.
No way.
And I did not die.
you're still here to live the tale.
Yeah, no, the thing with the copy is true. but
you're like, who would I show it to? Who haven't I showed it to?
But yeah, that's why I want to talk about Gore Verbinski. I think he's a great director. I miss him making movies more regularly.
You miss him.
No, thank you for.
I miss him. Yeah, no, and you know, and Gore, if you are listening, thank you for your service, because you did
Dreadful Digest. Everybody tag him.
No, thank you, Gore Verbinski, because you made five of my favorite films.
Wow.
I'm glad you pointed that out.
That's
yeah,
so cool.
And I think it's such a it's such a great career, and you know, to have him make The Ring, and then for Disney to trust him after making this horror movie to make this, you know, multi-million dollar franchise.
True.
Like, it's amazing. And
Pirates of the Caribbean is great.
Yeah.
It's great.
Another Disney tie-in, the actress who played Samara voiced Lilo in Lilo and Stitch.
The same year, I think, or the year after. Yeah, that's crazy.
Pretty close, yeah. So The Ring went into production without a completed script. Kruger wrote three drafts of the screenplay before Scott Frank came on to do an uncredited rewrite. Several high-profile actresses were offered the lead role, including Gwyneth Paltrow, Jennifer Connelly, and Kate Beckinsale.
Okay.
I can see that as well.
Yeah. I can see it. Yeah. I can't see it with Gwyneth Paltrow.
No.
But Kate Beckinsale, I think Kate Beckinsale would have ate the role.
Yeah.
She would have ate, yeah.
And but she was she was busy doing another masterpiece, Underworld.
Around the same time?
Yeah, because Underworld, I think, came out 2001 or something. I love Underworld. Oh my God, I have to rewatch it. I love that franchise. Who has the other one? Jennifer Connelly?
Yeah.
Jennifer Connelly. Yeah, she's great also.
Yeah, yeah.
But why not? But, you know, Naomi Watts. Yeah, shout out Naomi Watts.
Yeah. Speaking of Naomi Watts, Verbinski says they didn't want a super well-known movie star for the film.
But that was one of Naomi Watts' first American roles. And it's crazy how, because she did Mulholland Drive, masterpiece, then The Ring, masterpiece, and she did 21 Grams with Iñárritu, and great movie, and King Kong. Like, if, like for her first years in Hollywood, like she did four amazing movies.
Yeah, that's what it says. It wasn't until the 1-2 punch of Mulholland Drive and The Ring that really made her career take off.
Yeah.
On the other hand, for the role of Richard Morgan, they wanted someone who would hold your attention, and they cast Brian Cox for his gravitas.
Yeah, he's scary.
He's got creepy vibes.
Yeah, he has that. Yeah. He has that power. And
yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And even like, I think the first moment we see him, he's like hammering like this fence.
Yeah.
Right, and then when she starts asking him, like she even like looks at the hammer because he's kind of like grasping it like harder. You know, like even from that scene, you're like, okay, this guy, of course, they want to build some suspense and some mystery around the guy. But yeah, Brian Cox, he was the right guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Great job to the cast. Great job from the casting director.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So in developing the movie, the filmmakers talked about urban legends, the idea that more people who talk about it and share it, the more real it becomes. Verbinski quoted, "There's a vital aspect to an urban myth, the way it catches on, the way it's repeated." So they definitely lean more into the urban myth aspect of it.
Shout out to Candyman. In this version. If you haven't listened to our episode on Candyman. Check out Candyman. That's like what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. The film's cinematography is noted for its soft lighting and gray, blue, green color. Shot in film, the production is unusual for achieving its color correction in camera using 81 EF and one of two green filters rather than relying on digital grading during post-production.
Yeah, the movie looks so good.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think the look of the film, like it's such like it gives the movie so much identity over other films. Mm-hmm. And I love when films go for it. Like I know like many people criticize Twilight for that blue.
Just thinking it looks like Twilight.
But I love it. You know, I love when movies go for it. You know, some people are going to laugh about it. Oh, it's so green. It's so blue. Like it's this tint, this filter. No, it's not a tint. It's not a filter. It's a look.
It makes sense for the location of the film.
It's a directorial choice and it just makes the movie have like an identity. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I love the first Twilight, you know, they went for it. I like the movie, you know, not just because, oh, it looks blue, you know, like I really like the movie. And it's crazy how none of the other movies follow that look.
Yeah.
Because
even
The Ring 2 kind of followed this look. It wasn't directed by Gore Verbinski and it wasn't the same DP, but they kind of followed the look. And then they tried to recreate it in Rings, which is now, you know, in digital era and it didn't look that good.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, when I watched the 1998 Japanese film with Izzy and we like finished it today, she's like, "You were going to be so taken off guard by the American one because it's green." And I was like, "What?" She was like, "It's green." And then she walked away. And I was like, "What are you talking about? You watched the movie and it's green."
It's green. Yeah.
When I think of this movie, I think of like the imagery of the sky. Like it looks so, it doesn't look real, but it just makes sense. And yeah, it's very, very cool.
Yeah, and as you said, also to set the film now in Seattle, where it's always, you know, gloomy, rainy. Yeah, it just again, you know, choices, like creative choices.
Speaking of creative choices, this movie features an original score composed and arranged by Hans Zimmer.
Yeah.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not an intern? Was it really completely?
I think maybe at that point, I mean, I don't know that background, that backstory or that rumor, but I'm pretty sure that by that time, you know, 2001 when they were recording. Pretty sure it was him. Maybe now he has his interns do stuff. Yeah.
Is he known for having interns doing
things? Oh, yeah. It's like a big thing. I mean, for Dune, people said he didn't write a note of it.
What?
Look this up. I don't know if it's true. I'm spreading misinformation, but like...
For both movies?
For at least Dune 2. I don't know if this is true.
A lot of criticism to Dune 2 because they reused score from the first one, but it makes sense. It's part two, you know, like characters have themes, there's leitmotifs. So, you know, you have to, in a way, recycle the themes, you know, the music. Because they even disqualified him from the Academy Award, saying, oh, you just reused everything. Like, yeah, because it's a sequel. And, you know, there's motives and there's cues.
I gotta say the music didn't really stand out to me that much.
The whole thing.
I love it from the opening, even when we see the DreamWorks logo and you already hear the music. I really like it because it's very like mysterious, but it's also very like melancholic. Yeah, like for me it's the, and honestly, like, I'm not a huge fan of Hans Zimmer in general, but I think, you know, this is a great score.
So to advertise The Ring, the video from the cursed videotape was played on late night programming over the summer of 2002. Whoa,
no,
without any reference to the film.
Oh, awful.
That would be so terrifying. Yeah. Just popping up.
No.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. No. Especially coming off of, I mean, I guess this is, I don't know. I wasn't conscious in 2002. So I was alive, but I wasn't conscious.
You were a year old.
I was a year old. But coming off of
9/11.
Well, that was not what I was going to say.
Two things happened back to back. 9/11 and The Ring.
No. People probably were freaking out.
Well, yes. But also, I was going to say, what's the which one?
Oh, the Blair Witch Project.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. Coming off of like that kind
I'm
of
like 9/11. Yeah. Like the Blair Witch Project.
I was like 9/11. But coming off of that, like, you know, kind of like. Like that would seem to get Emerson a little bit. coming off of like this.
Yeah, our live audience is going crazy.
This is the first time I've seen him laugh.
No, I don't know. Like, I feel like even because this is what came out 1 year at 2002, right?
Yes.
You know, like people were probably freaking out about everything. So they see like this random video, they're like, another terrorist attack. No, I don't know.
I see where you're going with this. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not the point I was trying. Let the record reflect. That's not the point I was trying to make. But yes. But same idea. It's just like, you know, kind of
paranoia.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Could have just said that one word.
Nailed it.
Anyway, Tessa, let's
some more marketing fun facts. During the theatrical release, on a website called anopenletter.com, you can read a message in white lettering against a black background warning about what happens if you watch the video. And Sibia even gave me a link through the Wayback Machine so I could like read this little message. So,
yeah.
Fun stuff. The film is the first installment of the American Ring series, and it is followed by The Ring 2, 2005, and Rings, 2017. And then there's also the Rings short film that takes place between this movie and The Ring 2. Yeah.
Guys, my nail just came off again. I'm shedding.
No. You're just like Samara.
You're Sadako's
era. I'm just like Samara. Anyway.
And that is all my research for the American remake.
Yay. Very cool.
Let's get into our main segment.
Yes, ma'am.
Off the bat, we have Sadako versus Samara. Sadako is an 18-year-old woman in the book, and Samara is a child who's been, you know, in institutions and experimented on and all this stuff.
I love how in the film, I mean, we're going to get into it, but how, you know, everything when they're researching and they're finding out stuff about Samara, everything is presented as for you to feel very bad for her. You're like, oh, she was a little girl that was adopted. Mm-hmm. Then she couldn't control her powers. Her family was afraid of her. She got put in the psychiatric hospital. And then, you know, she got murdered by her mother. And, you know, and at the end, they let her free. You know, they let her rest, finally. You know, after all the things, you're like, okay, poor girl. But then at the end, you see, like, that was the thing all along, and she was always evil. You know, she knew what she was doing, and she wouldn't stop. People, she didn't want to stop. She just wanted to hurt people. Uh-huh. So,
and even Aiden knew that. He was like, you weren't supposed to let her out.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And that's a very good, there's a very good line at, in that scene when she's speaking with Noah after they come out of the well, and she goes, yeah, 7 days, when she says, you know, she just wanted to be heard. Sometimes children cry or draw pictures. You know, you just have to listen to your child. You know, sometimes you don't understand what they say. But, you know, children always come from a very honest place, and they just say things how they are. And sometimes they just don't know how to express themselves. So they're going to draw and they're going to say stuff that maybe you don't understand. So I think that was a very good thing. And you see the parallels between Noah, between Aiden and Samara, and you know, you feel mm-hmm. bad, you know, you feel like, yeah, her parent never listened to her, they never understood her. Mm-hmm. And then later you see, no, you know, she was just evil.
Yeah.
but I think that, that's a very cool moment. And yeah, again, similar to the original film, she's a ghost, you know, she's not really this tragic young woman, she's this evil girl.
Mm-hmm. The opening starts with the niece of the main character explaining that she watched the tape to her friend in the film. Now, in the book, the niece dies on her own while she's at her parents' house, and they aren't home, so she's by herself.
It's a great opening.
Yeah. We're probably going to be repeating a lot of things because this is a remake of the Japanese version. It's not trying to copy the book, really. So yeah, and also, a lot of differences are the same.
Like, sometimes, like Candyman, for example, it's like, is this a remake? Is this a sequel? This is not a sequel in the slightest. This is remaking beat for beat and also fictionalizing new information from the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not. It doesn't try to.
Yeah, this basically ignored the book. Like, there's no plot point and there's nothing from the book.
Except, yeah, the only exception to that is the thermography, right? That's not in the Japanese movie. Mm-hmm.
No.
No.
Basically, there's the moms at the presentation and
the back, yeah.
But that's kind of it.
Yeah, the powers and the backstory for Anna Morgan, the fact that she's adopted. I think most of the changes just come from Samara's backstory and her family.
Yeah.
Everything else kind of remains the same. And Aiden has way more stuff to do here than Ryuji. No, than Yoichi.
Yoichi, was in the movie briefly at the beginning, and then he wasn't really involved the rest of it.
Yeah.
Perfect. That's what I want from a kid in a horror movie.
Anti-kid. Anti-kid in horror movies.
Anti-freaky kid in horror movies. Although I'm not really anti that. Obviously, I watch a lot of movies where that's standard.
Mm-hmm.
But it was unnecessary with Aiden. He needed to calm down.
He was too involved for your
taste. He knew way too much. Why was Samara talking to him?
Yeah. I don't know.
Did you watch the sequel?
No.
What? There's answers there.
Oh.
Oh. All right. I need to watch the sequel. As to why Aiden's a freak.
Mm-hmm.
That's in that. Yeah. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Ring 2, Aiden's a freak. So in the film, there are creepy moments with TV static and like weird things happening around the house that doesn't happen in the book. Instead, the niece, I forget her name. She in the
Katie?
Book, the book version.
Oh, in the book, Tomoko.
Starts with a what?
Yeah.
Tomoko?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Tomoko goes into the kitchen and she just feels like something is behind her and getting closer. And that's kind of the extent of that scene. Our main characters, different. Asakawa in the book is a man, and Rachel is obviously a woman, but they are both journalists. In the book, Asakawa has a wife and a baby girl named Yoko, while Rachel is single and has a son named Aiden.
And an ex-lover named Noah.
And an ex-lover named Noah, who is Aiden's dad, yeah.
Yet again, where is the father? Noah, why are you so uninvolved? So uninvolved with your son's life. Well, actually, in Aiden's case.
Yeah, he probably is like, he ran, she sensed something was off. Yeah.
Something's wrong here.
But yeah, Aiden and the niece, his cousin, were close, who died. And that's not a thing in the book at all. Rachel decides to investigate the tape after talking to her sister, who begs her to look into it. Her niece's friends tell her about the tape. Yeah.
Yeah,
I saw her face, and then the jump scare of
that's so yeah. The look of these people that are affected.
Up.
Yeah,
it looks so scary. Creepy. I jumped.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I jumped.
Yeah, because it's literally yeah, like they're just talking like what happened, you know, it's a closed coffin thing, and they're like, you know, she's that's not normal, like she didn't have a heart attack. Yeah, her, like she had a heart attack, but it's more than that. She's yeah. like, I saw her face, and there is this ooh, straight ooh. Cut to her face inside of the closet, all open, gray,
yeah,
black eyes,
yeah, her mouth,
her like, mouth like yeah, fully yeah. open,
scary.
Yeah. I think the look the ring in both sound, like, in both this film and then the Japanese one of like the victims looks so good. Mm-hmm. I think just the open mouth, like it, because in the book it's described as like they're pulling their hair out and like mm-hmm. just they die so unnaturally. And I think the both film versions do that justice.
Yeah.
Asakawa learns about, you know, these mysterious deaths when he is driving with a taxi driver who explains that a motorcyclist just dropped dead near his car one day at the same time that Asakawa's niece died. They both were cited as dying from heart failure, and they looked like they were trying to rip out their own head. This leads him to want to figure out what the heck's going on. In this version, there are scenes with Aiden who... he's walking around the house after the funeral, and he feels a presence, tying it to his connection to Samara and also his dead cousin.
Mm-hmm. And they go to the room, and that's where they find the pictures, right? The strip.
Yeah. So they find the photos of Rachel's niece and her friends. They were staying at this cabin, and that's what leads Rachel to want to go visit this cabin. Asakawa has a whole thing we get into last episode where how he knows to go to this cabin is in
it's membership card
in his niece's room. She has a membership card to this resort, and then
that's not to her name, so he has to figure out who that belongs to. He calls that person, like, did you give her the card?
Yeah, convoluted. Yeah,
he doesn't like, call, he holds like a like one of her friends. And then, like, it's like a whole roundabout thing.
Yeah. Anyway, jumping to the cabin, Rachel notices a creepy tape the first time she goes into the cabin's office. Meanwhile, Asakawa doesn't know really what he's looking for in the cabin. He reads some notes from the friend group who stayed at the cabin, which leads him to rent the videotape and watch it.
And it's a great tape. I think it's the best, in my opinion, it's the best version of the tape.
Oh, yeah.
We were talking between the book, mm-hmm. which is 20 minutes, and then the 1 minute version of the Japanese movie, and then this one that's a minute and a half almost. But what I like about this one is that every image that we see in the tape, it comes back later as some kind of memory from Samara. Like a, some, yeah, like some kind of a, yeah, like she, it's like a vision of Samara, of Samara's past. And a lot of these things that Rachel sees in the tape, she ends up seeing in the real life. Like yeah. there's like a chair, you know, and at the end of the movie, when they go into the barn, there's the chair, and then there's the dead horses. And then she finds out that the horses ran, Samara made the horses run into the water and die. And then there's a ladder. And then when she comes out of a building later in the movie, there's like a long, like a big ladder. She comes, she, there's a, like a centipede.
Famously, there's a centipede.
In the tape. And then she comes across one centipede when she's digging out some tapes. You know, there's always something related either in Samara's, from Samara's past, or something that shows up in Rachel's life in these seven days. Which
tape is the one where they have the maggots that turn into people?
That's the Japanese
one.
I did like that one.
Yeah. That's why I wore that shirt with all those like people on it last episode.
That's why
I don't know. It reminded me of it as I was sifting through my closet. I was like, ooh, this could be some Samara imagery.
Oh, this is just like Sadako. The maggots.
Yeah, exactly. So something that happens in this version and the Japanese version is that when you watch the tape in the film and a photograph is taken of you, your image is distorted. This does not happen in the book.
And also in the book, you don't get a phone call in the book, right?
No.
Yeah, it's just
she mentioned
the warning in the tape.
Mm-hmm. No, the niece, I keep forgetting her name.
Tomoko.
She talks about briefly about, she's like, but the phone call. Because she's like, she doesn't think that the tape was real, but then she's like having a moment to herself. She's like, but the phone call. Mm. Like she's kind of starting to think it's legit. And that's like I think the only reference to the phone in the book.
Okay. Yeah, I don't remember because I thought the phone call was like a very, you know, very movie thing to make it real, you know, like we you know, and it's very creepy, you know, you ring the you take the phone and you just hear, you know, 7 days.
Yeah. This is the first version where like you actually hear on the phone somebody talking. And in the Japanese version, no, you don't hear anyone on the other end. So in this film, Rachel gets help from her ex, Noah, who watches the tape. Asakawa reaches out to his quote-unquote friend, Ryuji, who is an overly confident motherfucker who is not afraid of death and brags about assaulting women.
Yeah, we don't like Ryuji.
Well, yeah, we talked about him a lot. Edgelord. Yeah, he's the ultimate edgelord.
Ultimately an incel.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So true. Yeah. So Noah is the Ryuji of this film. Take him on Chi-Chi. Chucks it. So we learn about the islands differently where Samara grew up. In the film, Rachel spots a lighthouse in the tape, which leads her to go to Moesco Island, I think it's pronounced. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, in the book, Asakawa and Ryuji notice a volcano in the tape, which leads them to Izu Ishima.
Yeah, and which I think that's also like a bit less complicated, you know. She when they find the light, when they see the lighthouse in the tape, she's like, okay, I think I know where that is. She looks it up on the in a book, and then in the book, she sees a picture, a photo of like a bunch of people in front of the lighthouse, and she recognizes Anna Morgan. Mm-hmm. As the woman in the tape that's combing her hair. Mm-hmm. She's like, okay, so Anna Morgan, she's here in the lighthouse and she's there in the tape. So I do have to go to this island and look for this woman.
Yeah. In the book, they're like looking up all the different types of volcanoes that might have erupted. And yeah, it's a whole thing. So Anna Morgan is Samara's mom, adoptive mom. And due to her horse business not succeeding, she ends up jumping off of a cliff.
And I don't think it's more, it's like about the horse thing not succeeding, because they do mention that she was like an award-winning horse breeder. I think it's, you know, the visions plus all most of her horses dying because of Samara, that she's like,
oh right,
I'm out.
Okay. Meanwhile, in the book, Sadako's mom jumps in the aforementioned volcano.
Which I feel like that's a very, very nice visual. Imagine just jumping into a volcano. Like,
looks
that's
way
crazy.
Sicker.
That's, yeah. Because yeah. Anna Morgan jumps into a cliff.
Yeah. Right,
into the ocean. Mm-hmm. Which yeah. It's a very cool shot in the tape. But I can only imagine like how crazy. Nice it would be, you know, to...
Why haven't we seen that?
The visual of jumping into a volcano. You know, I wouldn't jump into one, but just seeing it portrayed in the movie.
I'd watch someone else jump into one.
That's so cool, jumping into a volcano.
You should do it.
Well, yeah, I'm just like, why haven't we seen that in any film version? I mean, maybe one of the 20 adaptations.
Yeah, someone should do an origin story. Yeah. Of, well, just wait. Are any of the other versions like really origin stories?
For the origin story for Sadako?
Yeah.
Not American. There's no American version of her origins.
Someone needs to do this. Someone needs to just talk about her mom and the whole ocean statue situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then the volcano. It's just crazy.
Yeah. So there are some creepy scenes added specifically into the film, including hair pulling.
Well, that's so nasty, that scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Rachel starts coughing and she just, you know,
pulling it
pulls
out of her mouth.
Out, like a hair out of her mouth. Yeah. Like with that thing attached, right? I really never identify what it was. Like, is it one of those things that they put people on the, like when you're getting like brain scans or something?
I
didn't know if it was like a, you know, like something that you put on the bathtub for the water to not go. You know? Like, I don't know. Like, there's so much stuff, but it's just so nasty how she just goes.
So it wasn't hair?
Well, no, but it has a thing on the end. No, I thought it was hair and that.
Oh, okay.
That's what I thought it was.
Anyway, pretty cool
or like
looking.
Like a cord. I don't know, but it's just nasty. It's a nasty scene. It's a great scene. I love it.
There's also a phone that's bleeding and Rachel seeing Samara's memories from the hospital. Those were added for the film. And I think, you know, for a Western movie, you really got to make it scary. So these did just that. In both families, the main character... Wait, why did I add that?
What was it? What did you feel the need to delete?
I didn't delete it. I don't remember where I was going with this. I just said in both versions, the main characters' families watched the film.
Oh, Aiden watches the tape and...
Yes. Okay. Yes. I'm like, wouldn't that be at the end? But no. Yeah. So Aiden watches the tape, and then also Asakawa's wife and daughter watch the tape. Horse plot. That is just in this version.
You know what's crazy is like if I were producing The Ring 2002, I would think having a horse trained, then having it jump into the water, like obviously it's not actually jumping in the ocean, but like having it do all that would be like really expensive and like unnecessary.
Oh my God.
Like how is that justified?
You need a horse wrangler.
It's not in the original trainer. Text. Like what is the motivation for like writing in this insanely expensive storyline?
It
works.
Want to know the reasoning.
But I don't know how.
No, I mean, for me, I interpret it as... you know, Rachel now having seen the tape, she has some kind of Samara in her. So when the horse sees her, you know, the horse, you know, kind of like what Samara did to the horses that was forcing them to just go into the ocean and die. You know, so the horse sees Rachel and now the horse wants to die. You know, she's scaring the animals. You know, so it's kind of gives that connection.
Yeah,
Rachel, Samara. Okay. And also, you know, having, I think also, you know, sometimes it's very cheap, you know, killing animals. It's always like, oh no, the dog dies. Oh, the cat dies. It's true. Always, you know, so maybe there could be something like that. Oh no, the horse, you know, like
it is very effective.
It's very effective, that scene. But I feel like it's more about that connection and how, you know, we see the horse. The horses are very prominent in the tape and they're very prominent in Samara's life. So to have a horse see Rachel and then see Samara, because the moment they look at each other's eyes, that's when the horse just snaps, you know, gets triggered. And that's when, you know, the horse just goes out and jump. I think that's, it's more on that.
But it is
a very expensive scene because, you know, you're there in that ship. I mean, of course, they were not in like an actual ship in the ocean, but...
But you know,
you need the ship and they needed so many horses.
Right.
And not just that horse, but just many... It's like an action sequence, you know, the horse is attacking people, is running. Yeah. Of course, the horse is not getting, they don't have any shot of a real horse in the ocean. But, you know, it's a very complicated sequence. But I feel like it was necessary for that, you know.
Yeah.
It's a lot, like it's a scene that many, many people remember.
That's true. Again, Godfather and The Ring.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. When I was rewatching this, I was like, waiting for the horse stuff because I was like, that's what I remember the most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, as you say, it's a very, very effective scene.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I guess I was just wondering, like, in general, why make Samara's mom like a horse trainer? What was the reasoning behind that?
As opposed to anything else.
Yeah, because in the book, her mom has psychic powers and it's a whole thing we'll get into a bit later. Yeah. But yeah, and then in this version, she's just, you know, a horse wrangler that adopted a weird kid.
So. Yeah.
I
think it just gives a little mystery to who Samara is because, you know, they say we don't know where she came from and it's this happy couple that adopted her. And yeah, I don't know specifically why horses, but I just think it makes it interesting, you know, to have something so new, you know, so different. Yeah. Like, yeah, why a horse breeder? I don't know, but it's just something different.
True.
Not something different and
it's true.
I think, you know, again, personality.
Yeah, makes it unique for sure. Yeah. So Rachel goes and talks to Samara's dad, who knows about the tape. In the book, Sadako's dad is in a sanatorium. So they end up actually, Asakawa and Ryuji go to talk to the guy who was in love with Sadako's mom. We didn't really talk about this guy much last episode.
Oh, yeah.
But this guy had a crush on Sadako's mom. And yeah, that's who Asakawa and Ryuji go to talk to on the island. And this guy who had a crush on her mom also gives insight into both Sadako and her mom's psychic powers. In this film, Samara was adopted by Anna, and Anna did not have psychic powers, as we mentioned. While in the book, both Sadako and her mom had powers, but Sadako's were more intense.
Mm-hmm. And I like that change. you know, not only makes the movie different from the Japanese movie, but I feel just grounds it a little bit more, mm-hmm. you know, to not have those powers. She, of course, she has something, but they lean more into like the supernatural, paranormal, rather than, you know, like psychic powers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like it's more, I feel like it's more believable, you know, mm-hmm. more grounded.
Yeah, and like having her be adopted, it's like, well, we don't know where she mm-hmm. came from. Who
yeah.
her were her parents? Did they have powers? Like, does give that sense of mystery and yeah. believability.
Yeah, which we do find out in the sequels, who's her real mother and who's her real father.
We do?
Yeah. Yeah. In the Ring 2, we get to know her mother, and in Rings, we get to know her father.
Oh, wow. Do they take anything from the book at all?
No.
Oh. Okay.
No.
Cool. There's a whole thing with Sadako in the book where she goes to join a theater group, and then she goes to stay with her dad at the sanatorium for a little bit. She's, like we mentioned, she was 18, while in this version, she is a child.
Yeah.
So we learned that Sumaro was put into a facility because of her powers, while Sadako, she wasn't put into a facility. She lived her life for a good while. Until she went to the sanatorium. And we learn that she was intersex. That's a main difference between the book character and the film. Jumping into the end a little bit, Sumaro was thrown into a well by her mom, left for dead. And this was where the cabin was built over the well. I honestly don't know why this location specifically, like, she just happened to be find this well and then throw her into it, but it's not on the island that she was born. So I'm curious, like, how did we get from point A to point B? I was kind of confused by that a little bit.
Yeah, me too, because it's because that the cabin is not in the island, and in the flashback when she gets suffocated and thrown into the well, we see horses also. So you would assume that.
Oh, yeah.
Remember? So there's this shot of kind of like this over the shoulder, very wide, of Samara in the well. And there's like a hill with a bunch of horses running.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So, you know, you kind of instantly like associate the place with the island. But it's not in the island.
Yeah. So I was a little confused by that. In the book, the location of Sadako's corpse actually matters. We learn that Sadako was assaulted by a doctor who worked at the sanitarium that her father was staying at. And Dr. Jotaro is his name. Jotaro proceeded to choke her to death and throw her body down the well. Years later, the cabins were built over the well where Sadako was able to transmit her thoughts into the videotape. So I definitely think the location makes a lot more sense in the book than it does in this movie.
Yeah, and how they find out also, I think, is like the best version, because, you know, they're in the barn and they're like, okay, what do we do now? And then they see the wallpaper, it's peeling, and they just peel all the wallpaper out, and they see this burn tree
mm-hmm.
that's outside of the resort. So it's like, okay, let's go to the resort.
Yeah, like when she peeks out the window, she sees the tree from the cabin.
Yeah. And it's very smart, because every time that we see the, like, when she enters the cabin, we see, they show, there's a shot of the tree. And when mm-hmm. she exits the cabin, they repeat the shot of the tree. And then in the tape, there's a tree burning. Yes. And then, so instantly when we see the wallpapers, like, okay, it's that tree. We already know it because we've seen it three times. You know, there's three shots already at least. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Yeah. I'm curious how she branded that tree onto the wall. Does she have connections to the island still?
Photography.
Yeah, but like, it's so far away, I'm assuming, from where her corpse is.
Oh.
Yeah. I know. I am trying to not think about it too hard, because I'm getting like the different versions. I'm combining like the different versions of her powers. And so it's the movie, this version of the movie definitely is more loose in like what her powers are. While I feel like in the book and the Japanese version, it's pretty much spelled out like what she can do.
Yeah.
When Rachel and Noah are trying to find Samara's body, Rachel ends up getting trapped down in the well. The top of the well gets pushed over. Sumaro pushes it with her powers, I guess. Meanwhile, Asakawa doesn't get trapped down there. He just passes out from claustrophobia. At this point in the book, he is like freaking out because it's his last day on Earth. And he starts kind of being delirious and not thinking clearly. But somehow he and Ryuji retrieve Sadako's bones and they're able to give the bones back to their rightful family members, the family members that live on the island. And they think all is well.
Yeah. And that moment is also, I think, it's a very good moment. And it's the best version of between the Japanese movie and the novel where, you know, in the novel, Asakawa, you know, he begins to freak out and he passes out. In the movie, Reiko, she kind of zones out and she's like, okay, that's it. You know, I'm done. And then she gets slapped and remember that you're a kid or whatever. And in this one, there's only that moment in the cabin where Rachel goes, you know, I think that's it. You know, we're done. I don't know what else to do. And that's when Noah goes crazy and throws everything. And then it's when they find out, when they find the ring in the floor, and they axe the floor and they find the well. But I feel like she's always looking, researching, and we talked about it about the Japanese movie, how once Ryuji shows up, he kind of takes over. He's like, I'm gonna investigate, I'm gonna find answers, I'm gonna do, you follow, you tag along. In this, it's always Rachel first, and then when Noah comes, they divide, you know, like, you secondary. Go here, I
that's
go there.
True. That's
so
very true.
They're always working together, and then how the movie's edited, it's like she finds something out, then we see him finding something out, then she finds something else, and he finds something else, and then they get together again after Richard electrocutes himself, you know. So I feel like they're always working as a team, you know. They're both
100%, yeah.
They're both you know, of course in the beginning they're not, because he's like, you know, this is just like a film, you know, this is a nice film, whatever. But student then once film. He sees his face film, is distorted, he goes like, yeah, okay, no, I believe you now, let's work together, you know, let's work together and let's find things out. They're always a team, and you know, they're both doing stuff, and you know, that's again like another point for the
another plus,
for the American
yeah.
film, you know.
This is how I wish Reiko was in the last one. Yeah,
yeah, not so passive. Mm-hmm. And then having, as you said, like Rachel has that attitude. You know, she snaps back at people. And even her first scene when she enters and the teacher kind of reprimands her for not being there. And she's like, you know, no, you know, I'm his mom. I'm doing best. Mm-hmm. I'm doing what's best. And there's also this moment when she's writing about the tape and the boss comes in and he's interrupts her and she's like, you're fired. Like, no, I'm not. Yeah, you're fired. No, I'm not. I'm writing such a good story. He's like, you're fired. I'm not. You know, I'm not. You
love
know?
That, yeah.
And it's very nice. You know, she has this leadership, this autonomy of, you know, I'm going to find things out. And once the tape, once she gets course, she's like, okay, next day, she's already going.
That's
and then,
true.
You know, then Aiden, and there's throughout the film, you see there's this weird relationship. And we get to see a little bit more in the sequel where she says, like, she didn't want a kid, you know, she didn't want Aiden. So you see that kind of gap, that emotional gap in between them a little bit. He doesn't even call her mom.
Yeah,
you know?
We haven't really talked about their relationship.
I always thought that was odd.
So,
yeah.
Rachel. She's busy. Rachel. She's always working. And it's kind of put this divide between them.
Yeah. But I feel like that makes her a better character. You know, she's flawed and she has this desire to live and to protect the son, even though there's that emotional gap. You know, she snaps back at Noah, you know, when he's like, oh, it's a student film, all this. And she's like, okay, yeah, fuck you then. You know, if you don't want to help, fuck you. You know, I'm not going to beg you. Until he finds that he is cautious, like, you know, well, yeah, let's find out what's happening.
Yeah, she's
you know?
Not begging
and she's
for
like,
herself.
If you're not helping me, I'm out. You know, she stay with your lover. I'm out because I know this story. You know, you're gonna tell me I'm a resentful bitch or something, and you're gonna tell me like I'm a good for nothing. That and you know, and she goes, he's like, bye.
Yeah. So the ending of the book and film are slightly different. Asakawa lives because he showed Ryuji the tape, and Ryuji proceeds to die because he didn't show the tape to anyone else. Asakawa realizes his family is unsafe. And so the book ends with him planning to have them show his extended family members the tape so that they can live. Meanwhile, the film ends with Rachel helping Aiden physically copy a tape with the intention of showing someone else. But we don't know who that someone else is going to be.
Which it's a better ending. Like, it makes so much more sense. You know, we don't get to see who the tape is going for. And as you said, like, in the previous episode, Sam, like, it's so stupid for both Reiko and Asakawa to just go, oh, yeah, I'm going to show it to my wife's father or my father. You know, like, why? Like, I understand, you know, you know how to break the curse, but I don't know. I feel like it's still something so big and traumatic, even though, you know, you tell someone, I'm going to show you this, but you have to make a copy. They're going to ask questions. You're going to have to tell them.
Yeah. You know, it might be a bit complicated.
And you showed me this?
Yeah.
You know?
You
so,
decided to show and, me this.
And, yeah. Yeah. And it's not very apocalyptic, you know, this right. ending, but it is very sad.
Yeah.
You know, and how she's still... They know what they're doing. Ada knows what's happening. And she just goes, you know, like.
It is what it is.
We just have to survive. You know, it is what it is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I like both endings. I think the panic you would feel of like, who would I show this to? I don't know. I guess these people. I guess my family members. Because how else would I be able to explain this to somebody else? I think that makes sense for like the time crunch they were on. But yeah, I do like the mystery of this ending as well.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in this version, we also get the iconic imagery of Samara stepping out of the TV and ending Noah's life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care for Samara's look. I'm gonna be honest. Like when her when the hair reveals her face,
mm-hmm.
and she like looks like an old woman,
yeah.
like she's all weathered, and I was just like, I don't find this scary. I definitely found the 1998 version of this scene much scarier.
It's scarier. I also don't love the flicker. Like Samara, when she comes out, she's kind of flickering.
Mm-hmm. Oh
like
yeah, there's some it doesn't
static.
Look great.
I'm like, okay, this is kind of
I
strange.
Actually did like that. Yeah, you guys didn't like that. I thought it was
I
cool.
I think if it had better digital effects, it might have looked better.
Yeah.
I just didn't love it, and I love how every step she takes, there's water that mm-hmm. she leaves behind. That I like.
I like that too.
I like that she looks very very wet.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Yeah.
But. Yeah, also, I don't love the face reveal.
Yeah.
I prefer the eye.
The eye. The yeah, that's all you need. Yeah. That's all you need from that other version.
But really, shout out to that actor, because I think he did a very great job throughout the film. You know, most of his scenes are with Naomi Watts, who could easily act circles around any actor.
Mm-hmm.
And he did very good. But yeah, I think it's that scene, you know, this how scared he is, really just sells Samara in general. And
true.
I always found it funny how every... he wears flip-flops throughout the movie except when he goes
really?
In the island, but he's wearing flip-flops in
oh, it's raining all the time. My guy,
no, when he's outside he's wearing boots.
Okay.
But I don't know, it's so funny to see him inside the apartment. You know, it's normal, you know, you're inside the apartment, you're wearing flip-flops, but I feel like there's not a lot of flip-flops in movies. There's not a lot of feet in movies.
Yeah, it's
always
jarring.
Yeah.
No,
this one's more feet in movies.
Yeah, let's have more feet.
Hey, you and Quentin Tarantino have something in common. All right, those were all the differences I could find. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on?
I think that's most of it.
Yeah.
I think it was pretty spot on.
It's a lot of broad strokes changes, so it's kind of hard to like nitpick, because it's like, well, where would I even begin with like, you know, certain things. Like
yeah.
We talked about Samara's backstory and
that's what it is. It is what it is, yeah. So, the ultimate question. What do you prefer? The book, Ring 1998, or The Ring 2002?
The Ring 2002. Oh,
yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
I think it has so many iconic scenes. It's, again, you know, the look, the emotional connection that I have with that film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's a film that I've seen so many times. I saw it with my mom. I've seen it with so many friends. Just this month, I watched it twice.
Wow.
Once with a friend when I was in Querétaro for a wedding, and she loves The Ring, and I told her, let's watch The Ring. I have to watch it anyway for a podcast.
Yeah.
And you know, let's watch it. We watched it together, and then we saw The Ring too also.
Mm-hmm.
And then just last week, I wanted to see it again just to have it even more fresh. And
mm-hmm.
like anytime is good for me to watch the film. Like I really... really like it, and I miss movies that just go for it, and you know, the look and acting, everything. And there's so much good horror now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like I'm complaining like, oh, you know, I want these movies back.
Oh yeah. Horror's
because,
been great lately.
You know, horror, it's I think it's best it's ever been, because there's so many variety. There's so much variety, you know, like if you want to watch slasher, there's a new slasher. If you want to watch found footage, there's one. Mm-hmm. And if you are more into like commercial horror, like more accessible, like Blumhouse or Atomic Monster, there's that, you know. And if you want something like even like more into like the dramatic side, then go for A24, Neon, you know, like there's so many. So it's not like I'm complaining like, oh, there's nothing like The Ring anymore. Mm-hmm. But I do love the film, and I do think that there's not a lot of films like that nowadays, you know.
Yeah, they definitely that 2000s look. I wonder if there'll be a renaissance. I mean, all of us who kind of grew up with it, we're now at the age where we can make movies. And so I'm like, you know, there was an 80s renaissance. I wonder if 2000s renaissance will be a thing.
Yeah, and it's a movie that was so successful that I'm surprised that they haven't
milked
made
it.
More out yeah. of it. Because even Rings, that was a movie that I really didn't like. It made a lot of money. And they're not movies that are very expensive.
Yeah, I saw Rings before I saw this one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I saw it in theaters when it dropped. It was in an era where I was watching like a lot of movies in theaters, like The Conjuring stuff and The Purge stuff. Like I was just going with friends and we wanted to see it. So I was introduced to the concept from Scary Movie and also Rings. Yeah. Yeah. You could make a Ring movie.
Oh, yeah, I'm down.
I'm down.
Somebody has to have them, right? If everybody in Japan, many like Japanese versions.
Probably
like,
Paramount.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely Paramount. Yeah. That's where it lives.
Or you can go to Japan and make one.
Awesome.
It might be possible. Sam, do you have a preference?
This is so tough. No, I liked all of them for different reasons. It's like that, you know, by watching the 2002 one last, like stuff was off-putting. Like for me, like the whole horse thing was off-putting. Mm. And, like the big changes, I was like,
Like what was the reasoning? Like, did it really add anything? Yeah. Yeah, I get it.
But also like as if we're talking about a horror movie, what was most effective? Absolutely. It's 2002. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about story, I think I'd have to go with the book. I don't know, but if we're talking about a movie that I would like rewatch, I think I would do the 1998 one. I don't know. Okay. I liked all of them for different reasons. I know that's not a good answer, but if I had to like FMK those movies, probably kill 1998, marry 2002, screw the book.
Okay.
That's how I would do that.
Interesting ranking system.
Yeah. That's pretty good though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That describes my feelings towards them.
Yeah. So I'm going to say I prefer this version simply because it's something I could see myself rewatching. I think it's more accessible. It's still something you do have to pay attention to quite a bit because it's a mystery, it's an investigation, but I feel like I was able to comprehend what was going on much clearly in this version. So I could see myself revisiting this. Yeah. This versus that.
I hope it's freaking weird. What is it?
I have some weird ones, I guess. Samara versus Sadako.
Oh, Sadako.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, versus as in what?
Who do you prefer? Not a fight. They're Sadako. Not fighting, to be
either
clear.
Either way, Sadako. Even if they were fighting.
Yeah, I'll go Sadako book.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Sadako book specifically. Yeah. I think she's so much more nuanced in the book.
Yeah.
She has a lot more going on. She's more complicated. So I think she's a much more interesting character. Her being like a child is kind of like a tired concept. Mm-hmm. Like the creepy kid with psychic powers, I feel like, I don't know. That's been done before.
So much.
And then, she just wants revenge. You know, yeah. She's a ghost that wants revenge. Mm-hmm. You know, in the book, it's way more than that.
Yeah.
It's this tragic woman that was misunderstood, and she was intersex, and she was, you know, betrayed by everyone. There's so much more to her than just being a ghost, a vengeful ghost. You know, I love Samara. I love Samara, but I feel like Sadako is... She just has way more to offer.
Yeah. She's that girl.
She's that girl.
We did gloss over it, the fact that she's intersex in this version, but we do talk about it quite a bit in the last episode. So definitely check it out. It's something that I feel like most people, if you're only familiar with the movies, you probably would not know that detail, but I think it's very interesting. And especially like how you described it, your reasoning for it. So go check it out.
Right. I will say, if you Google, and I did make this mistake, I was still surprised to find that information in the book, but if you Google while you're reading the book, stupidly, like me, is the girl from The Ring, one of the first results will be, is the girl from The Ring intersex? And that will spoil it for you. Oh. Sorry to say.
Wow. Yeah. The first one?
It's like one or two.
Wow. Okay.
I will say, like, I still didn't know it was coming, because, like, that doesn't confirm or deny that information, but, like... But I wouldn't have even thought that if it wasn't for that. Yeah.
Very random, unless you read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's such a shocker.
Yeah.
Especially, like, if you're familiar with the films and then that happens, like, why?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's great. Like, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. Rachel versus Asakawa.
Rachel.
In a fight? Or what? What's...
Who do you prefer?
Which Asakawa?
The book version.
In a fight, Asakawa. Who do I prefer? Rachel.
Okay.
I mean, I don't like Asakawa.
Well, yeah.
Actually, I'm changing my answer. In fight, Rachel.
Yeah.
I think Rachel would win. He seems kind of pathetic in a lot of aspects.
Yeah, that's true.
No, she's going to protect and she's going to do everything she can to...
That's true.
For the story or for Aiden.
Asakawa can't even survive. Take care of his kid on his day off. Like,
Right. And also, it's Naomi Watts.
Yeah.
No, it's Naomi Watts.
Yeah, interestingly, both of these characters, they're workaholics. They are away from the home a lot of the time, and their families definitely feel that. So that's interesting.
Yeah. And also, I think Rachel, again, like, I think it adds a lot to the character how this is like a real relationship that they had. You know, they were married. They're not married now, but they still are working together. They're close to each other. They want to survive. None of them is like a sexual abuser, you know? And
yes.
And like Noah is like a nice guy, you know, things considered, against Ryuji. And I love that moment towards the end of the film where they solved everything. They think they're good. And, you know, they pick Aiden up. They're driving. And Aiden is sleeping behind in the car, and then he just sees how they're driving. They touch hands. You know, he sees kind of, oh, your family's together again.
Yeah, that's a sweet moment.
And then they say goodbye. You know, I feel like, you know, they were, you know, there's many circumstances in relationships that force you to get away from that person. But then I feel like at the end, you know, they were separate. And they are going to keep separate. But there's always that love that, you know, that they have for each other that they kind of found in this 5 days that they were together, you know, five, six days. So that also makes it way more sad how, you know, that last scene that they have. And the next scene is also like a good scene between Rachel and Aiden. And then next scene, Noah dies. She finds the corpse and then, you know, they make the copy. Mm-hmm. But I really like that relationship between Noah and Rachel that I only picked up that deeply in these two past watches from this month. You know, and you see different things as you grow older, as you grow up, you start picking up different things, and those are the best movies, you know, like the ones that you keep watching, and of course it's the same movie, but you interpret things differently and you find new things. And this relationship that they have, I only found it in these two last watches, and I loved it. Because before I kind of didn't like Noah. It's like, oh, you know, this maybe
that's
this,
how I felt.
This deadbeat dad that like, okay. Is just, you know, he just left and he doesn't believe her, and then only when he's in danger he believes her.
Mm-hmm. Exactly what I was thinking.
But I think there's a little bit more. I think he kind of how do you say, like, you know, even though he was like that in the beginning of the movie, he kind of has this comeback later.
Yeah, their short moments together are sweet, where Aiden actually like sees them together and he's probably like, oh, I have a family again.
Yeah.
And Aiden's even, he's definitely more prominent of a figure in this than Yoichi. In the last one, Yoichi like is gone for most of the movie, but Aiden is actually like there with them. Yeah. Like, he's not sent away somewhere else. Like, he's actually there.
Yeah. Yeah, because Yoichi doesn't get to do anything.
No. He's just there to be creepy.
But interestingly, Yoichi in Ring 2, he gets a lot more to do. And also Aiden in Ring 2, he gets a lot more to do.
Okay.
Because in Ring 2, the American Ring 2, Aiden basically gets possessed by Samara. So Samara wants a mother. So he gets possessed by Samara. And in the Japanese movie, basically there's some crazy doctors that want Yoichi because of his powers.
Mm-hmm.
So Mai meets Reiko and Yoichi. And then a lot of things happen. But Yoichi gets to do a lot more. And yeah, there's a lot of stuff in Ring 2 Japanese that I don't like. Also in Ring American. But I think also they're kind of worth a watch. And this child possession thing that they do in Ring 2 American, it's interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Coke versus lemonade.
What?
What is that a reference to?
So in the book, the...
Oh, she's getting
she's
Coke,
drinking Coke.
And then she's getting lemonade. And okay,
yeah, and
it,
then
it,
in the
it.
Film, she gets lemonade from the fridge.
Lemonade, because do you think...
Iced tea. Coca-Cola.
Pepsi. Turn around, touch the ground, kick your boyfriend out of town. What's the rest of it? I don't know.
I don't remember.
Can you do
lemonade.
It?
Lemonade. What are you doing?
I don't know. I haven't done this in forever. Iced tea, Coca-Cola,
Pepsi. Lemonade, iced tea, Coca-Cola, Pepsi.
Then you turn around and you touch the ground.
Wow, I had never heard of that. Like, that's such a white American thing.
This is our culture.
Yeah. I'm going to go with lemonade on that.
No, I'll do lemonade.
What?
Yeah, on, lemonade all the way. Here? Don't do soda.
Sorry?
People, don't do soda. Don't drink soda.
Yeah, I know soda's bad for you, but
we
like...
We get birth just as I look.
I watched Ring and all I got was this Coke. I'm going to go with Coke. Gosh darn.
Gosh darn.
Gosh darn. this was a stupid one. I did Aiden versus Sixth Sense Kid. Struggling to think of things.
But listen. That's
what?
That's like...
Like what? As a character, a as an actor, in a fight. In a fight, I think Aiden wins.
In a fight, for sure Aiden wins. Aiden would kick butt in
I usually am never like in a fight. And you always assume it's
in a fight. It's always
in a fight. It's always a fight.
It's a fight.
I guess I was
in
just
a court
like,
of law.
Who do you find creepier?
Oh, Aiden.
I find creepier Aiden.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aiden has malicious intent behind his eyes. The Sixth Sense kid is scared.
As I'm thinking about this, I'm just like, a better comparison would have been Aiden versus Danny Torrance.
Oh, yeah. Which Danny Torrance?
The one in the
There's
Kubrick
only one Danny
film.
Torrance, no? Oh, the Ewan McGregor
versions.
One?
There's like book, movie, or TV movie.
Oh, I've only seen the movie. There's a Kubrick movie. I'm like, Ewan McGregor from the sequel?
He would definitely win in a fight.
In a fight, Aiden also. I think Aiden wins
Aiden,
in every fight.
I think Aiden fight. Is top dog when it comes to creepy little kid.
Yeah.
Oh, but Danny has like all these like ghosts protecting him, right?
Okay. I see. Well,
are they protecting him?
Tony is Tony is him.
Actually, I'm getting the we're combining the book and the movie.
I've only watched the film.
Yeah.
So in the film, he's not protected by anyone.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm getting the book.
He can just see the future. That's all he can do. Whereas Aiden is talking to murderous ghost women, drawing holes.
Yeah, I think Aiden wins. I don't know a kid that would beat. Aiden. I would even choose Aiden over Ewan McGregor's Danny. Like Aiden is that kid.
He is that kid.
He's that kid.
Sadako is that girl.
Yeah.
He is that kid.
That kid, that boy.
Great. I think Danny's creepier.
It's so funny that he has like Aiden has a chokehold on me right now. Like, I'm so scared of that kid. But like when I do think about it, it's like what did he do? He drew pictures.
He has
but it's scary.
But Rachel says
it
in the film.
Early. That's
you know,
his
like,
only
people,
problem.
Kids don't know how to express themselves. Sometimes they're just gonna draw.
Yeah, but he doesn't need to talk to ghost girls. Like,
he's supposed to be independent. He has no one else to talk to.
Yeah, but she listens to him.
Yeah, his mom doesn't listen to him.
Something about him is wrong.
No, I definitely find him when he's like doing his own tie and like when he gets his mom's outfit ready for her. I'm just like, ooh, that's weird.
Boy mom.
The ultimate boy mom. No, this is what happens. This is what happens
is
when
what
you
happens?
Treat your son like this. I don't know where I was going with that.
Treat him like, no, what?
Wait, she wouldn't even be a boy mom because boy moms are overly involved in their son's lives.
She doesn't even look at him.
No. She's the anti-boy mom.
That's not true, though. Oh, she does care.
She does care. Yeah, we're getting this
wrong.
Rachel
cares.
Getting this all
wrong. She lives with him.
Yeah.
She provides him food and a house. Yeah. What more do you want?
The first times I would watch the film, I always thought that she was the adoptive mother.
Really?
Or like an aunt or something, because she's always like, Rachel.
Yeah.
Never calls her mom. Yeah. In the second one, they play with it because he always calls her Rachel, but then he starts calling her mom. Mm.
I was hoping he would do that at the end of this one.
Yeah. Freak.
In conclusion, Aiden is a freak.
Yeah.
And he would beat everyone in a fight.
Sinister energy from that kid.
100%. All right. That is the end of our This Versus That segment. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Yeah, of course.
Shout out your socials again.
Yes. So you can follow me on Instagram at my personal account, Luis_Quijano. It's LUIS_QUIJANOH. And you can also follow my production company's website, which is Balche Films, BALCHE Films. And also the website is balchefilms.com, where you can watch some of my shorts, the movies that I have in development, and a bunch of stuff. There's a lot of documentaries and music videos, commercials, short films, narrative, a lot of horror. So yeah, feel free to check it out, follow me. And if there's any other filmmaker watching, you know, I'm always down to collaborate, do stuff together. I love shooting, I love directing. So yeah. I'll be there.
Yeah, definitely check him out. Whenever he does a Ring remake,
yes.
it'll be there. You'll be the first to know. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's involved in the horror genre quite a bit, so definitely check out his work. And next episode, we're going to be covering I Know What You Did Last Summer, both the original movie, the young adult book, yes, it's a young adult book, and the new sequel that's coming out. So make sure to check those episodes out in a couple weeks. And yeah, follow us on at Dreadful Digest Pod at Gmail. Now you're getting me on the Gmail kick.
Wow.
You're messing me up.
Army Hammer, email us at Dreadful Digest Pod.
No, Nicholas Holt.
Yes, Nicholas.
Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok at Dreadful Digest Pod, where you're going to get all the updates for our upcoming stuff. So yeah, thank you for listening, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.